is going to be helping out, and I'm just going to share with you some things, and then Don is going to take off from that, and then we'd like to open it to questions and answers, and we'll do the best we can to thoroughly foul you up by the time we're done. You know, I first realized the difficulty of staffing very early in my ministry, and it revolved around a situation that was the first time I had to fire somebody. I mean, it was just this gut-wrenching experience, and, you know, you go through all those emotions thinking, what did I do wrong, or why did I hire the jerk in the first place, or, you know, the things that you go through. And got through it somehow, and I decided, well, surely there is a method to deal with this, something that's going to help me preclude this from happening again. And so I got in my car and drove down the street to a guy who had been around, I think he co-pastored with Methuselah, I'm not sure. And, you know, he had a large staff and church and all, and so I went in and talked to him and said, tell me, how in the world do you do this staff deal? Because I don't get it. And he looked at me and smiled in his sort of Oklahoma way and said, beats me, when y'all figured out, let me know, will you? And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this guy's been doing this for years and he doesn't have a clue. And I suppose if somebody came to me and asked me, I might say the same thing today. But we're going to do the best we can to give you some degree of help. This is what I intend to do. I want to just give to you some questions that you need to ask when you are thinking about staffing, whether that has to do with developing a staff in the first place, adding to the staff that you now have, rearranging the staff that you now have, sort of moving somebody out, moving somebody else in. These are absolutely critical questions to ask. There are questions that I have not always asked, and I got to tell you right up front, to my own detriment. This is one of those areas where, boy, you learn it the hard way. You are going to learn it, but you learn it the hard way, and these are things that I wish that I would have thought about more carefully along the way, and I try to do better at it each time. The first question you need to ask is this question: why? Why are you adding staff? Now, when I'm talking about staff, I'm not talking about volunteer staff at this point. We can deal with that, and that's okay. Even using the term staff, just by the way, can become a problem. And I hope you understand that. Because when you use such a term, automatically for some people that says, oh, I see, well, we've hired somebody to do it, and so I don't need to do it. We've got a hired gun, and so that person can go out and do this job. They really don't need me, or they're sort of a first-class citizen. I'm a second-class citizen. And these terms can really get in the way. So, but I'm talking about the people that you hire, the people that you bring on to do a particular task. Why are you adding a person to your team? One reason, it seems to me, as I look around at some of the fellows in the Calvary chapels, is that it seems almost to add to their personal credibility. That is to say, they feel as though if they have a staff, then they're a real one. That until they have a staff, they're not a real pastor, but when they have a staff, then they have arrived. No, when they have a staff, they have a problem. You pick your staff, you pick your problems. You're going to have problems. That is a given, sort of like a marriage. You know what I'm saying? And so you really need to understand, is it because you just need some credibility? Is it because you want to shovel off some work you don't like to somebody else, like counseling and calling and preaching and youth work and children's work, and so you can go minister to the greens at Pebble Beach or wherever it happens to be? I mean, is it because there's just stuff you hate and you're sure somebody else can do it? And if you just had someone else on, you'd let them do it. What a blessing. Is that the reason that you're bringing somebody along? Are you doing it because you are growing and you assume that if you grow, that by definition that means that you need to have somebody or somebody's else? Forget about the fact that whether or not you do, you just kind of look around and you say, well, gee, they have names on their bulletin, so we're bigger than they are. I guess we need names on our bulletin, so we better hire somebody. Is that why? Why are you adding staff? The only real reason to bring somebody on your staff or add to your staff is because you absolutely have to. and there really is no other option. You know, Moses kind of went into that process kicking and screaming. It wasn't his idea, but he kind of got to the point where it would appear as though he was so overwhelmed that somebody had to help out in the process. And you've got to just ask yourself the serious question, step back from the immediate needs that you have. Am I at that point? Are we at that point? Don't let the difficulty of the moment drive your decision to add a person. I've done that before. I felt like I was overwhelmed, that I just had to have somebody to fill this particular area, and so I jumped too quickly. And I came later on to rue the decision that I made because I was just too impetuous, too unwilling to allow some time to pass before the Lord would bring the right person into that place. And I got to tell you this, when it comes to staff, my experience and the experience of a whole lot of other people as well is it's an awful lot easier to do than it is to undo. It is an awful lot easier to add somebody than it is to subtract somebody, because you're not subtracting somebody. You're subtracting their family. You're subtracting their friends. You're subtracting their in-laws and their outlaws in some cases, and the president of the bank. I mean, you're just affecting a lot of people. And so you need to think through carefully before you ever jump into that why it is that you're going to bring somebody along on staff. Personally, I have always tried to keep my staff and our church lean and mean. Now, mean has not been hard. Somebody got all fired up one day with one of these, I always forget which name comes first, Myers-Briggs or Briggs-Myers or Briggs and Stratton or whoever it is, you know, that does these attitude deals in business. They said, oh, we got to find out how all these people are put together. Let's take one of these things. And they put it on the computer. So everybody on my staff took it. And we found out that there was not one guy in our staff who had any mercy at all. Just a typical Calvary staff, Don. No mercy. None. And it really hasn't changed. It's gotten worse. So it's not hard to keep them mean, but it sometimes is hard to keep them lean. When I mean keep it lean, I mean sort of right on the edge of just being fractured with work. And I feel that that is important because then the people who are a part of the body can own the ministry. When you are a pastor, you're called to equip the saints for the work of ministry, right? That is your challenge. You aren't to be the saints doing all the ministry. You are to equip and release the saints for the work of ministry. That's what you're called to do. You work shoulder to shoulder in the process of ministering God's word and God's life to people. And so for me, I try to keep that as small as we possibly can. We happen to have a number of people on our staff, but it's because we have a school and a lot of the other stuff going on that many of you have as well. So the first question is why. The second question is what. What precisely are the needs that you now have that make the addition of a staff person essential? Where does God have you as a fellowship right now? Forget about all the other fellowships that exist. Where does God have you as a fellowship? What are the particular things that God is putting on your plate? What are the particular, the unique, the peculiar things that God is calling you into? And the key thing or the key things for which you need to be adding staff? What are the priorities that He has for you? Because, you know, your priorities aren't my priorities. Mine aren't somebody else's. And so your need at this point may be for a secretary. Your need may be for a person handling middle school ministry. Your need may be for an outreach person. You know, I don't know what the specific thing happens to be, but you really have to be on your knees before the Lord seeking that one out clearly. What is the specific thing that it is that God now wants us to do? And you have to describe that enough for yourself so that you know what it is you're looking for. And, you know, it can't just be, well, I need somebody to hang with at lunch or to relieve my boredom. You have this pressing need for which there needs to be somebody there. And so you can say, this is the what of it. A part of that what as well is, what kind, therefore, of person are you looking for? This is critical. This is really critical. And this is where you can get burned maybe more than any place else. You may find the best, for instance, singles person around. You feel that's an area of ministry that you want to segregate out because that's what God has done and so forth. You may find that he is the greatest thing since Coca-Cola. But as a matter of fact, what if his approach to ministry turns out to be different than yours? What if he's really a closet Baptist? Or worse yet, a closet charismaniac. What happens if he starts chuckling with the singles? setting the stage for much more raucous laughter. What if he gets in their face because they are baptized with the Holy Spirit and he's just certain that those things aren't for today? What if he's long on technique and he's long on methodology, but he's really short on the Word, short on a dependence upon the Lord? That very thing that Pastor Chuck has just talked about. He's just really into the programs and the glitz and all that kind of stuff, but he's not just walking with Jesus and having that unique understanding of what it is that God has called us to do. What if he draws people to himself, doesn't really draw them to the Lord, and isn't, for that matter, supportive of your ministry? And in one way or another makes that clear to the people who are a part of the ministry that he is now sort of drawing around himself. You need to realize there really is a difference between Calvary kind of people and other kind of people. Have you found that out yet? I mean, Calvary Chapel does have a unique approach to ministry. It just does. And the very thing that Pastor Chuck was talking about a few minutes ago, we have all experienced people saying that we are either anti-intellectual or disorganized or 1,001 other things. We do have an unusual approach to ministry. And that stance where you are centering on the worship of the Lord and the sweetness of that worship of the Lord and centrality of God's Word, and the dependence upon His Holy Spirit to lead you to the very next step, you know, and you're just right there on the edge all the time, knowing that without Him, you're dead meat. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't seem like there are a whole lot of fellowships or fellows out there that function that way in this day. And you need to be looking for people who share that understanding of ministry, who really share that approach to the ministry. That therefore means you have to have a pretty good understanding of what their spiritual life is, where their understanding of the Word is, their reliance on the Spirit, and so on. And what kind of a servant they really are. Are they coming to serve or are they coming to be served? Have you ever had this happen to you before, that some guy in your work is, in your fellowship is out of work and so suddenly he's called to ministry? Why is it that those things seem to go hand in glove? Well, I was fired, but I just feel this call on my life to serve God. Great. Super. Sure it'll work out well someplace else. What kind of expectations do you have for this staff person? Do you expect too much? Do you expect too little? Do you know what it is that you are expecting them to do? Don and I were talking about this earlier, about the idea that sometimes we need a particular slot filled. And so let's say you need somebody in your high school ministry. And so you sort of pluck somebody out of the body and say, I'm sure you can do this, and you put them into that spot. They don't have a clue as to what they're doing. And then you get all frustrated and upset because, A, they aren't doing whatever it is that you thought they should do but failed to tell them. B, they aren't equipped to do it in the first place. And C, you don't have the time to equip them and really aren't interested in it anyway. But you're sure they should be doing the job. You know what I'm saying? So what kind of expectations do you really have for these poor people? And can you help them by actually establishing that for them, helping them to come to grips with the particular things that you have for them? Will you give them a living wage? So they don't need to be concerned about sort of where the next meal is coming from. Now, Don pays all of his people by having them eat from his pantry. I think, isn't that kind of the way it is? Yeah, it works well for him. And they have quite a turnover there, but at any rate, it is critical that you understand what it is that you are expecting these people to do, and you clarify that with them, and that you're willing to help them to grow in their calling. What is it that you're looking for? Thirdly, when is it that you are going to bring somebody onto your staff? If you've just launched a building program, is this really a good time to add somebody? If right now you breathe a huge sigh of relief when you get paid, is this really a good time to add somebody else? You know, there's all kinds of hash that needs to be settled in the leadership of your church. It's just sort of a subtle roar. Is this really a good time to add somebody to the mix? Now you've got 50 people. Now you've got 150 people. Now you've got 1,000 people. Is now the time that you need to add somebody? Really, the bottom line here is God. Now that sounds horribly simplistic, but it is absolutely true. The Lord has to be the one to call forth that position and that person, or you're going to be in even more trouble than you are now. And so the when of it depends upon the Lord. I learned a long time ago a principle that I have worked with for years, and that is, when in doubt, don't. Just wait on the Lord, and the Lord will be faithful. The fourth question you need to ask is who. There are so many important things to consider at this juncture. I just want to lift up a few of them in terms of the kind of things that you're going to look for in a person, whatever the particular position happens to be. One of them that I have found to be important is flexibility. Pastor Chuck says, you know, blessed are the flexible, for they shall not be broken, and that is absolutely true. You need people who are willing to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And no, that may not be what they are doing for the general thrust of their ministry, but when there are those unique things that somebody needs to step up to the plate and to do, they need to be willing to do that and not sort of be griping in the whole process saying, well, I really didn't come on for this anyhow. I mean, how come you're asking me to do this? If they are concerned all the time about what it is that they've got to be doing, then they're probably going to be the wrong person. Flexibility. Second thing is diligence. You want to look for somebody who works hard and who is a self-starter. I one time had a guy on staff that we had to call him in the morning to get him out of bed. Now think about this. You're going to hire a secretary to make calls to your staff to get him out of bed. My wake-up call is at 7:30 this morning. You know, I had no idea that this guy was going to be this way. He didn't last long, but I wish I'd known that in the first place. If you've got to jumpstart them, they're the wrong person. If you always got to be sort of telling them what to do next, what to do the next day, what to do the next week, then, you know, you don't need to. You can do it yourself at that point. You've got to look for people who are self-starters. You've got to look for people who are diligent. You've got to look for people who are always going to sort of keep their nose to the grindstone and go for it, who see needs that are there and can move to minister in those areas of needs. I really appreciate having staff people who see needs that I don't and fill them before I even know that they existed. And they just kind of smooth the rough waters that otherwise could have been there because they have a right heart about that. And they really do desire to minister the love and the life of the Lord. And so you need to find people who are diligent. A third issue when it comes to the who is to clarify whether this next slot is going to be a project or a product. Now, those are two different things, and I don't intend any value judgment here. Please don't misunderstand me. Some people you bring on staff are projects. That means that you need to be pretty heavily invested in the process of training and equipping yourself, helping them to know what it is that the specific things they need to know in their ministry. And you understood right up front that you're bringing in this person, that they've got some wonderful gifts in their lives that God has put there, and with a little equipping and all the rest, God's just going to get them to the next stage. You know, for me, one of the things that I have found in the last several years is if the Lord tarries, I'm putting my money on Generation X. I believe in these young people today, man. They are hot. They are strong. They are people who God is going to use to do great things. In many cases, however, they have to be even reparented. They come out of situations, as you well know, that are just so zany. It is just almost hard to imagine. And some of the most basic things that I would take for granted in just how you go about living, they don't know. But boy, with a little help, these guys are lethal. And I have found it to be exciting to just share life with that whole group of people. But I understand up front that it is going to mean time on my part. For us, for instance, a couple of summers ago, we're doing it again this summer. We did a thing that is a Timothy group. This one, I guess, will be 2 Timothy. But where I just picked a group of guys from the fellowship and said, come on over to my house on Thursday nights and let's just talk. And we'll eat together. It's not real fancy. I cook hot dogs. And then we talk and about what it means to minister. We probably spend 2 months just talking about call, what it means to be called of the Lord. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that act like? What does ministry look like when it hits the street and so forth? And the Lord did some really tremendous things in the fellows that we had in that Timothy group. And I look forward to doing that again this year. But if you have a product, that means this is a person who's going to hit the road running. They already themselves are ready to train. They are ready to replicate ministry. They're ready to move out there and work with products that are projects themselves. If they're a project, then you're going to need to invest some time in that. And sometimes you hire a person thinking he is a product when in fact he is a project, and that's when you're going to have a problem. So you want to think about that one. Should you hire from within or should you hire from without, outside the ministry? I think, all other things being equal, I think it's God's best to raise up people from within. And people that the Lord has brought. Now, I realize that early on in your fellowship, that's not so easy to do. And sometimes in very special slots of ministry, that's not always so easy to do. Worship ministry, you know, there's certain skills that are, you know, that take an awful lot of time and all the rest that you may not have anybody to fill that particular place and maybe need to go outside the fellowship. But if you are adding to your staff from within the fellowship, you already know those people's strengths and weaknesses. Coming in from the outside, they could surprise you. They'll surprise you anyway. But you're going to have less surprises if there are people that you have developed and cultivated in ministry from within. I know for us, we do the very best we can to equip and to release staff people from the body itself. Also, when you separate or set apart people from the body itself, you also don't have to be concerned about the trust factor being developed because they already know people and people know them and they know their wife and they know their kids and, you know, all that stuff. So you don't need to spend that 6 months or a year or whatever it takes trying to get up to speed on that stuff. They can just start their task and go for it. Another issue is what kind of background specifically is needed. It's well and good to sort of have everybody be generalist, but the fact is there are certain areas of ministry, especially as you grow larger, that demand some very unique skills. And you need to just be aware of who it is that perhaps in your fellowship that the Lord has given, has built those skills into, and therefore should be set apart in that area. For us, for instance, one of the more recent hires we did in our children's ministry is a woman who has, she headed Child Evangelism Fellowship for our whole, like a 3-county region for half a dozen years probably, and was involved in it for years before that. Now, her only real struggle at that point was she'd been filled with the Spirit for a couple of years, and if you know anything about CEF, that can be a real challenge. And but she was very, very good doing what she did with children. She's one of these people who give her some bubblegum and baling wire and she can make or do anything. And she has been a blessing, an absolute blessing to our children's ministry staff. And but it was great that we had such a one and she had those particular tasks, a thing that I'm looking at right now in a staff addition that we're making. Again, there are very particular skills and so forth that I need before I can set somebody apart in that area. Another issue is, where is this person's wife in the mix? And where are they in relationship to their ministry? And this is critical for the who. It's not at all atypical for a guy to feel very called in ministry, but for his wife not to be supportive of that. And unless and until she is, everybody's going to hurt. Everybody is going to hurt if you put them into that position. Now, when we hire a staff person, we don't assume that we hire their spouse as well. Having said all that, she is absolutely vital to the life of the body and the fellowship. And people do make judgments based on where she is emotionally, spiritually, in terms of her support and affirmation and all of that. And so you need to get to know those people. Whether it is through the process of interviewing, if you're hiring from the outside, when we were much younger, and I did some of that, I would have those people come and stay with us for several days. And so we got a sense of how they interacted and how they interacted with our kids and how they interacted with our dog. And, you know, we had a large dog in those days. That was a challenge. He weighed 135 pounds and could look them eye to eye. And you need to see where their wives are. The next issue you need to ask is how long? Are you looking for somebody who is going to be with you for a season? Or are you looking for somebody who's going to be with you till Jesus comes? What are you looking for in that regard? Now, we could say, well, it's all just kind of for a season as time permits kind of thing. I understand that. But I think you understand that there is a difference there. One of the fellows who has been with us for a couple years when I hired him, it was his understanding and my understanding that he was going to be with us just for a season in time to accomplish some particular things that needed to be done. Now, we didn't know how long that season was, whether it was a year, whether it was a year and a half, whether it was 2 years or whatever. He came to me here, a month or so ago and said, "Do you think the season's about up?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it is." And we both understood that it was time now, that those things had been done, they were accomplished, and we praise the Lord together for that, and he could go on to the next thing which he has to do, and I could die without him. No, I could go to the next step and the things that we needed in the process. The key on that issue is that you communicate carefully with your fellowship what's going on. If you expect that you're going to have turnover, then they need to know that. Because otherwise, there is somehow a tacit assumption that there's something horribly wrong with you. Why is there always this turnover? Golly, it seems like there's a revolving door at our church. People coming and going all the time. Well, I know we only pay our secretaries $3.30 an hour. What do you think? You know, I mean, you need to communicate whatever in the world that it is. And you are going to have a revolving door if you have other kinds of problems going on in the fellowship. But you need to make a determination right up front. Are they going to be with us for a defined period of time, or are they going to be with us for the long haul? And I don't care whether you're talking about your professional staff, whether you're talking about your pastoral staff, your clerical staff, whatever part of that have to be. We have people who have been on our maintenance staff who have been with us for years. We have some people on our pastoral staff who have been with us for better than a dozen years. We have some people who are new. Some have lasted less than a year, and some have gone a whole lot longer. It all depends. It all depends. And that would be true here at Calvary and Costa Mesa. There are some faces that you have seen on this staff for a long, 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 long period of time, and others that you haven't. And I think that's a decision that certainly it is always as the Lord leads, as the Lord directs, but somehow a sense in your mind going into that. What is it that the Lord specifically wants to do? There are so many questions that we could ask and answer, as far as I'm concerned, about staff that I wasn't really sure where to stop and where to start. And so Don is now going to come up and piggyback onto this. All the way from San Jose. Is it still raining in San Jose? Is it?
I want to clarify something here that a cheap shot that was made about me there, that the staff eats out of the closet pantry. Well, I have come to find, I mean, that is true. I don't, I mean, that's true, but the... But the issue is, I found one of the key. I mean, a lot of people think you're not going to keep them long if you do that. And I've come to find if you keep people so poor they can't leave, they don't leave. And so works for me, you know.
I know it.
Bill called me and asked me if I'd do this. I said, sure, but I don't know what I'm doing. And so when we talked this morning, I said, give me your notes. So I have an idea what you're doing. So I know, so he says, you read this kind of, so look through my notes, look at my outline, and then, things that, maybe, didn't hit on that you see, respond a little bit to. So I'm just going to take a couple minutes here, and then I think we have a question and answer. And maybe that'll, a lot of times those things bring up a lot of questions that you're asking that we don't bring up, so I think that'd be good. But just a few things. One, in just the area of choosing leadership about it, and that Bill already said this, so this is a little bit reiterating, but three words that I just suggest, write them down, and when you're choosing leadership, you might go back and look at them. I just, when I was sitting here, looked at them, but thought of them. But number one is, do you see a spiritual heart? Above all else, there's no amount of talent or capacity or ability can overcome somebody that doesn't have a spiritual heart. They don't have a heart above all else for God. They won't last long. No matter what abilities or capacities, no matter what people skills, social skills, any other thing they've got, I've come to find if there isn't a spiritual heart, you look at this person and realize they love the Lord. That's a tremendously important thing. Secondly, do they have a servant's heart? A lot of times you'll see people that they can talk spiritual and they know spiritual and they can describe spiritual and they can exegete spiritual and they can do all of that. But then when you stand away and look at it from a distance, they don't have a servant's heart. They appear to have a spiritual mind, but they don't have one of the real tests of it is, do they have a servant's heart? How are they with others? Do they enjoy serving other people on staff? Do they interrelate well? Sometimes you get somebody that they're little prima donnas. They expect to be served when they come on staff, not realizing that they moved into a role of servanthood. And do they enjoy serving others, the staff around them as well as the body? And thirdly, do they have a sacrificial heart? Because ultimately, to me, the ministry, it's again a place to where do we understand sacrifice of life? Are we in it as a job? Is it a career? And it's, again, as Bill mentioned, I think to be shared with a couple very much, because if you've got one that understands the idea of sacrifice and the other doesn't, you're in trouble. And so is there a sacrificial heart? Do they know the cost of ministry? And do they love paying it? Is it one that happens grudgingly, in a sense? I don't like it. I don't want it. Or whatever the time and issue that's going on in their life at the time, do they do it with joy? And if they don't, whatever else they've got, you're in trouble. And I think as well with a sacrificial heart, are they hardworking? Are they somebody that you realize they work hard? As Bill said, they get up in the morning, they show up there. You laugh. See, that's quite funny. Till we've done that. Literally, I don't know how many times. Get them out of bed. Call up that youth guy and tell him to get an 8 on his clock. And if he doesn't get a clock with an 8 on it, a lot of you worship people. Their first clock, the first number on their clock is a 12. And you get that clock fixed or something. And you're going to be trouble. Second area, entirely different, but of leadership. First is choosing leadership. Another thing I think is very important, and that is a modeling leadership. We oftentimes we want a staff, but then do we want to model some leadership things to them as well? One of the things I'm very grateful for, having been here in the early 70s on staff, is that Chuck, and he's still this way, I'm sure, and he will be until the Lord comes, but he's somebody that he models by his life, by his disciplines. Here's a man that years ago could have backed off and decided, oh, I'll come and go as I please, but he's a disciplined man. He's there. He shows up. He's constantly around the ministry. He doesn't leave it alone. I have a brother-in-law that was telling me a little earlier he was going through some things in his business, and He has a company with over 300 employees. And we got to talking about it one day, and he made an interesting comment to me, and just about how he needing to be there constantly. But he said, the crops don't grow where the farmer's shadow doesn't fall. And I think in one of the things, when you start adding people, you're adding people that are going to learn from you by how you live, ultimately. Not by what you say many times, but by what you do. How do you, when you say, this is the type of staff I want, are you that type of person that you're actually saying you want yourself? Are you one that you're asking more of them, more sacrifice or heart or something from them than you're willing to throw into the kitty yourself? And that can be a real problem. And to where the you want to model leadership. Thirdly, do you inspire leadership? In a sense of where you, one of the things that Bill addressed is you shouldn't, we're famous sometimes for adding people on staff when there isn't a need. And do we really need them? And just a subheading to that issue of need is sometimes the word under need is just has to do with vision, in the sense of you may have, three people in your high school group and feel, well, we don't need a youth director. And obviously, we only had three people. Well, maybe, though, if you've got youth coming in and out of your church Sunday by Sunday and they don't stay, maybe you need a youth director, somebody where you're going to invest in the leadership so somebody has the vision to get these kids and to inspire them. Go find them on their campuses. Go meet with them. Call them. Disciple them. Pray with them. Draw them in. Sometimes there's just the physical need that's there right then. Sometimes there's the void. That you need to fill a void that isn't being done. Two other areas very quickly, and then we'll open it up. The other one is of developing leadership. And as I think you bring people in for leadership, it shouldn't only be for your sake in the sense of ministry as to what you need done by them. But one of the things I think as well is that you also realize you're bringing somebody in to ministry that you long to have them find ultimately their call. Many times as you bring them in, they're kind of just cruising around, figuring out who they are and doing well and ministering to people. But one of the things I love very much that back when I came around here was right after Romaine came, and then Mike McIntosh and Tom Stipe and Greg Laurie, and but Chuck always had this attitude, not only here is what I want you to do in one sense, but there was also this whole thing of where Chuck had a vision to, how can I help you, in a sense, find out who you ultimately are, what your real role and call in ministry. And that was a struggle for me, because the fact that when I came here, Tom was in evangelism, Mike was in evangelism, Greg was in evangelism, and I tried evangelism. And actually, my tapes, I found out one time when I was here, my tapes sold very, very well. One time they found out they actually outsold Chuck. It was embarrassing for him. But that was until they found out the doctors were prescribing them to cure insomnia. And but I wasn't called to be an evangelist. And it was sad. I had the smallest thing never went on in this building. Monday, Chuck packed it out Sunday night. Monday night it was packed out. Tom packed it out Tuesday night. Wednesday night we had married things that I oversaw. Thursday night, Chuck packed it out. Saturday night, it was packed out for Maranatha concert. Friday night, I taught. And we had, actually, it was a nice group. There was 400 or 500 maybe, but it was, people used to come by and say, is there a funeral going on here tonight? And nobody's here. Because everything was jammed to the hilt. And it was funny, because I remember one time Chuck Girard with Love Song came. And I taught a study that these guys came to, and things, a bunch of Maranatha musicians. And he came and he offered. He says, Don, you're a good teacher. And maybe could we come and help you? They offered, we'll come and sing. And, he was real serious. And Children of the Day did the exact same thing. He said, we'll come and sing. And really, we'll all sing for you if it'll help, you know, and things. But maybe you're singing too, or something. Maybe that's the problem. But the thing is that I wasn't called to be an evangelist. And I went to Chuck one time, and I said, Chuck, everybody's offering to help me. And he kind of nodded, like I thought maybe he'd send him. I wasn't sure, but he. He said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, you know, they play on Monday, they play on Thursday, they play on Saturday, they play on Tuesday, and there's great evangelism. But I believe God's calling me to teach. And he says, then you teach. And then we'll just keep it small. And so we did. I taught, and we kept it small. But the but he had that freedom in a sense of where are you going and what is your call. I appreciate that. And who I am and what I'm called to do. And I think that's both. We're not only we're looking at what we want from somebody, but do we help them find it? And then lastly, as a staff, do we love them? And do we really love the staff? I think that the one of the wonderful things about a church staff, as opposed to any other form of staff, is that people ought to marvel, my, how they love one another. And that they look and realize they're a family. They are a team. They love serving the Lord. They love serving one another. They love ministering to a body. So, the questions. What? Well, why don't you stand up and ask you, what do you, why don't you take the mic?
Why don't you go ahead, if you have a question, stand and ask. Greg, you want to add something to this? Were they really that small? No comment? All right. Any questions that you have, why don't you stand and address them? You don't need to all do it at once, Don. It's kind of like your Thursday evening study. Depends on whether you're the senior pastor. The question is, the question that he has is establishing pay. And what happens if there's a sense that someone who is on the staff needs a higher salary than the senior pastor? Is that okay? And the answer, Don says, is no, it isn't. Are there any other questions? I don't know. Are you cool with that? I think all of that is really up to a church and where they are and what they, you know, what their determination is. I don't think there's anything that floats down from heaven that says person A needs to make more than person B or whatever. I don't think that. I don't think that's some big issue. No, if you're asking me what we do. We try to pay our people well enough so that they can live, and we don't sort of make adjustments as to, oh, we'll pay this person more because they have a larger family or this person is single or whatever. We really do it as the position and not as the person. But there are others who function differently than that. Don, do you have a comment? Is that pretty much how you function as well?
Two quick things. One is, I think in the early stages of a ministry, I think you do whatever you got to do to pull off ministry as a team of people. I mean, what do you got to do and how to, but ultimately, a laborer is worthy of his hire. And I don't think that you ultimately pay somebody according to their need necessarily as much as here is what the role in this ministry is. So often, you know, pastors have to go to their board and justify getting a raise because of poor stewardship. Here, I spent more money than you gave me, so you got to give me more. No, it just ought to be what we want to pay and what we want to pay for the ministry you're doing here. It doesn't mean that you need it. Hopefully someday you're at a place to where you're paying more than you need. And not because you've justified here I need it, but because the body is able to support it and to do it. But I think until that, oftentimes it's just you're out scrapping and pushing and pulling, and what do we have to do as a body and as a team of people, you know, to make this thing come together while we're building it, and then try to get it on an even keel as the process happens.
Yeah. Other questions? Is there such a thing as nepotism in hiring staff? You mean, should you hire all your family?
I mean, if the person that you're seeking for specifically is a
Okay, the question is, if you have a particular need, should you feel constrained not to hire a person who is in your family because they are in your family, even though they have the ability to fill that need? If you were to take Pastor Chuck as a case in point, he has had family people involved here. My son is our worship leader at this point in time in our own fellowship. Don, your son has not worked with you, but he has worked in other fellowships. Has he worked on your fellowship, in your fellowship staff as well? He's on your staff now. Okay, so I don't know if that says the way that it ought to be, but that is the way that it is in some places. Now, you can take that to a ridiculous extreme, and Don has also experienced that. Do you want to say anything about that?
You know, I fired my wife, all right? Is that what you want to know? No, the church, I wondered, what is he looking at? And then he reminded, the church I came into, it's a long story, but there had been every single person in the family, and distant relative. I think the family tree was on the payroll somewhere. And unfortunately, they had tremendous financial problems, and then there was also a lot of times no ministry justification for them. But at the same time, to me personally, I have three sons, and I'd love to have them all on staff. And it's neat watching them grow and have a hunger to serve God and doing it. But you look at the scriptures and you see how constantly, you know, Old and New Testament on how the families, as a family, oftentimes were there. But I also think there has got to be that very healthy thing within a staff where the nepotism doesn't come out in a sense of where that's a guiding influence. Somebody ought to be there because that is their heart and is their call, and they are proven to be there. And not because of the fact that their blood got them there, but their heart got them there. And if it isn't justified by heart, then blood shouldn't be there. And so, more questions.
There was a question in the back. No, you don't.
What about women?
We don't consider women on our women on our staff to be pastors, if you're asking me that question. But we do have women on our staff. We have them function in relationship. We have one on staff who functions in relationship to our women's ministry and heads up that women's ministry and a lot of the counseling and so on that goes along with that. She would not teach in our normal setting and so forth. And we have women who are involved in our children's ministry, different areas of that, from curriculum writing to, you know, and so forth, and other certainly clerical and so forth positions, but not in pastoral positions as such.
Did you?
Yeah. Don would be the same. Ditto. Other questions? Yeah. Oh boy, that is a really good question. How do you draw the line between running your staff as a business versus a family versus whatever? Probably a lot of us have been through a lot of things on this one. I will just tell you this. Listen really closely to what Pastor Chuck has to say over the next couple days. It is absolutely critical to that question. Because I think that if you look at the church growth movement, for instance, we've come to the point where we went through this whole thing, if you read Christianity Today especially, that just is sort of shills for the church growth movement, as does much of Leadership Magazine. They almost see pastors as CEOs. And we've gone through that period of time where pastors are seen as business leaders. And so you run your staff like you would run the staff of automated data processing or some other such thing. A business is a business, and the body of Christ is the body of Christ. And the body of Christ is not a business. And you must not come to the point where you see yourself as an executive, or as far as I'm concerned, you've just completely missed your calling. And I think the same thing is true in relationship to the way that you operate as a staff. Now, certainly there are principles that apply in the thing that we're talking about in work hours. And yes, we have those things printed up, sick leave, and what do you do if or otherwise. I mean, we've got, I don't know how many people, 65 or something full-time people. We would be making decisions about, wait a minute, this was out 7 days in the last X amount of months, and this one, we'd spend all our time doing that. We don't have time to do that. And with the school and, you know, the radio thing and all the stuff that goes on, you've got to come to some basic understandings. But even then, we flex on that stuff. It all depends. And I just think that the church has really missed it when it has allowed itself to get sucked into this whole concept of the church as a business. That is not what it is. It is the body of Christ. And it has to be seen that way, and it has to be understood scripturally. And so that, you know, that's going to translate into the way that you relate to people who are part of your staff. And that's part of what Don was saying. We're talking about loving these people and trying to create that kind of a relationship. I mean, have you ever had a secretary on your staff who hated people? Was sorry they showed up to say hi? Wait a minute, it's not 9 yet. I'm not going to open that window. You know, I'm probably in the wrong place. Any other questions? Yeah. Do we have mechanisms for accountability and reporting of staff? Well, for us, for instance, we have the people fill out evaluation forms themselves after ministries of certain things have taken place, so they can say what happened, what was good, what was bad, what if we were to do this again, what do we think, you know, needs to take place that would make that better, more effective. We really missed it on this. We weren't prepared for that. You know, that kind of a thing. And do we go through the whole process of reviews and so forth and so on? No, we really don't do that. Do you do that kind of stuff? He doesn't believe in any accountability at all.
Actually, keep on having to defend myself here. We found the accountability problem was solved ever since we just installed a little computer chip in their forehead. It tells us when they come and when they go, and so the accountability is solved. It's
great. Any other questions? Yes. Yes. Well, it is that for one thing. There's another thing that can be an issue here. Let me speak just to our situation. When things got pretty complex for us, I thought that it would be really helpful to have a person come in who had a really good administrative background and so forth to handle a lot of those areas. And what I found over time was, and he had a good heart and all those things, but he was so oriented to a business understanding of that, that over time, he really wanted to move us into that kind of a model, that kind of an understanding. So you've got your policy manual and you've got your, you know, all this stuff. And I just, it was just deathly, in my opinion, and for the organism itself. That isn't what we're about. Now, there were things in the organization that he did that helped us, but overall, I would rather have had someone with a pastor's heart who had a bent to doing some of that administrative stuff than somebody who was just predominantly or primarily an administrator. But yes, the bigger you get, there's no question about it. The more complex it gets, the more you have to fight that process. Having said all that, Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa is the best illustration I know of the fact that you can be huge beyond belief and still not do all of that stuff in the way that the church growth movement, at least, would suggest to us that it has to be done. It obviously doesn't have to be done that way. You want to say anything to that?
Yes, I have a question, Bill, for both perhaps you and Don. You might be able to answer it. But recently, we had to make some staff changes, which I had to initiate. They weren't the best possible circumstances. The body itself.
I think he fired somebody.
The body itself seems to be doing fine, but personally, I was struggling a little bit because, after all, I was the one to initiate and bringing this person on the staff. And I think the Lord has spoken to me and taught me some good lessons through this. It's happened twice in the life of our church now. And he's taught me some
That's
good
all.
Lessons. But I thought maybe both you and Don might share for a moment on some of the lessons that God has taught you through some of the mistakes that you may have made as you look back at.
I think the main lesson would be just stay real small and never have staff. Then you don't have the problem. Then they'll just fire you.
I did have to fire my wife, though. So that I think, again, a lot of lessons have to do with, first of all, going back to they share your heart. If there's somebody that comes in, mistakes I've made, in this area, or where I brought people in and either deceived myself or allowed myself to be deceived, that they did share my heart and my vision, and then when they got there, they didn't. Whether for theological reasons, I went through one thing, for example, with somebody where they came in and how they loved Calvary and were so, you know, and they'd been over into a Reformed background, were so relieved to get out of all this legalism and all the other things, and just so excited, the freedom and discovering mercy and God's grace, and just thrilled to be in there, but then as they got in, they tended to do unto others what was done unto them. They were spewing out all, it was just constant Reformed theology is all that they seemed to be able to deal with, and a lot of the condemnation and the judgment of it. And we tried to deal with it and tried and spent a long time, weren't able to do it, so we had to part company. And I think sometimes when you just look and realize, hey, we've made a mistake. And it's time to go. And since I signed the checks, you're the one that's going. But God has ordained it so, and so, sorry, and, or whatever, but, I mean, that's the truth, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Because I know I'd have fired me if he could have. He would have. So the feeling was mutual. It just that I was there first. And so but I think you have to be, and then just whether it's telling people we made a mistake. Just that simple. We made a mistake. And hopefully they'll grow on. One time, you know, Paul had to tell John Mark, didn't want him, don't send him. Then later on he grew. Send him. And the wonderful thing is they fixed it. And that's always a door you want to keep open. So.
And those, I would love to be able to tell you that those two are the only two you'll ever experience. It is just probably you're not going to be that fortunate. That's just the nature of human relationships. And you wish that everybody would just kind of work up to speed and all the rest, and it doesn't always work that way. And things don't work out. And sometimes you just come to a common recognition that this just isn't working. I've had that happen before. I sat down one time with a staff guy and said to him, you know, it's just not working for you, is it? And he said, no, it's really not. And, you know, it was a very mutual kind of thing. It was unfortunate that it didn't, but it just didn't work. And one of the things that I want to add to that, however, and this is just a personal thing. Don may not do this at all. But I have made it a practice always in our ministry not to spend time talking publicly when somebody has to be let go about why they had to be let go. It is just not helpful. It is not edifying. It doesn't build up them or the body or any other thing. And the one that gets hurt usually in the process is their wife. Because oftentimes if the person was a lousy worker or some other such thing, and she doesn't know that, and I'm not going to berate him to her and tear him down in her eyes and all the rest. I don't want to have to live with that. And, you know, the Lord will, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. He'll take care of that stuff. You don't need to get caught up in it. But there are those who will say, well, gee, you just don't really, you just need to kind of air that stuff out, get it all out there. No, you don't. You don't need to do that. Do you talk about that publicly? Don't do it either.
So we never mention their name again.
I'm sure glad I asked you to do this with me, Don. It's... Anything else that you'd like to ask? Any other last questions? This is going to be the last one. Who wants to be last? Does Jean have a job yet?
She's Pope.
Popeette, that would be. Yes. I guess if you have an understanding that you buy into the same understanding of where you all are going, and you haven't hired people who want to do the same thing you do and really want to get you out of the way so that they can do it where you were doing it, then probably you're all going to be growing together in those areas. And normally speaking, that won't be a problem. And if the Lord moves in some other place, then such is life. That happens. And I'm sure you've had people that you were... That the Lord had for another thing that they needed to be about, and you were sorry to see them go, but it was a good thing for them to be in that place. And so you've had guys start churches before, good people, and you know, who were really helpful on your staff, and yet there was something that the Lord was doing in them. Otherwise, if you're staying on the same page, moving along together, that doesn't become a problem, I don't think. In our particular situation, we have a staff meeting every week, and just to talk about what's going on, just so we, you know, it's more of a communication kind of thing, so we know what we're doing, and talk about the neat things that God has done together, and rejoice in who's been healed or who's sick, or so we know that kind of stuff, and you know, because again, the bigger you get, the more complex you get, the more that people assume that you know that somebody's in the hospital and you had no idea and you're feeling bad about it and they've been in and out, or you know, and you don't know any of that stuff. And so you've got to communicate those things. Well, God bless you all. The staff is always a challenge, and as you hang in there and trust the Lord, He will enable you to have a strong one. God bless you.
This is the end of Side 2. If you'd like more information on tapes, please contact Chapel Tapes. The address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. God bless you.